This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The best bits of Joy Drive.
Now, we've seen a worrying increase in LGBTQIA+ hate, and we've spoken quite a bit about it here on Joy Drive. Well, what's causing it, and what role are both traditional media and digital platforms playing in stoking the fire? Well, Justin Ellis is a senior lecturer in criminology at the University of Newcastle. Justin, welcome to Joy Drive.
Oh, thanks, Warren. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Justin, where is this hatred and extremism coming from?
Oh, I think you've asked a good question there, Warren, because I guess we know that the communities that have been stigmatised, like LGBTQ+ communities, that stigma might be just below the surface, and it only takes the right conditions for it to rear its ugly head. And we've seen that recently, particularly in Victoria, with, I guess, a confluence of, you know, traditional conservative perspectives on LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. And those perspectives have been co-opted by far-right extremists. And we've seen this in a way in a range of situations, protests at Drag Queen Storytime events, but also, I think, more generally in Victoria, protests at council meetings and what have you. But the short answer is it's a confluence of stigma, the legacies of criminalisation, pathologisation, and intersection with online platforms not moderating hate speech in a timely manner. The other point is permissive politicians during the Trump years. We've seen it in New South Wales with Mark Latham. So they're definitely not helping with emboldening hate.
Something that I have never understood, Justin, is why are these extremists targeting the LGBTIQA+ community only? Like, if they're so narrow-minded and so right-wing, why aren't they also targeting other minorities?
I think that in some ways, LGBTQ+ people are an easy target because of those legacies of stigmatisation that I've talked about. You know, the criminalisation of consensual male same-sex conduct in Tasmania, for example, until 1997. That was only 26 years ago. So I think those legacies and residues are definitely still with us. In terms of other groups, it's good I can't really answer that question, but I think that it's really the legacies that are driving it of stigma.
You wrote an article in The Conversation recently, and you mentioned the term manosphere. What's that, and what does that refer to?
The manosphere. So it's an overlapping combination of websites, blogs, and social media, and it's really a group of people that are spruiking misogyny. And I guess what we might call a hegemonic version of masculinity that is talking about, denigrating women and so on. So we see an intersection here, back to your first question, we see an intersection here between some of the comments that those particular people are making, but then it might extend to white supremacy and nationalism. So it's this toxic combination through digital networks that we're seeing.
Justin, so what role, let's look at media, and we've got the traditional media organisations, and then we've got, I suppose, the digital ones as well. What role are the media companies playing here, and do they benefit from this?
Well, they do. Well, see, unfortunately, you know, the traditional news media model is based on on adversarial positions. You know, you're getting a balance of one person's perspective in relation to another's, and that creates tension in a narrative. So we're still seeing, as much as traditional media is waning and social media is definitely the dominant force, we're still seeing stories being positioned in that way. We've got polarisation of opinions through those media outlets that are still trying to work a business model that isn't reliant on print advertising. That still hasn't been achieved. I think the other big contribution here is misinformation, and we've seen that out of the States with the Fox News settlement with Dominion voting systems. So I think traditional media are definitely contributing to misinformation that could, you know, more broadly speak to unreasonable, baseless claims about LGBTQ people being threats to children, for example, and that drag queens are grooming children. So I think that broader context of misinformation and disinformation is definitely contributing to this general rise in incivility and hate.
We're chatting with Justin Ellis, Senior Lecturer in Criminology at the University of Newcastle. Justin, so what are the social media companies doing about it? Are they moderating it? Are they trying to tone it down? Are they doing anything, or are they benefiting from it?
Well, they're definitely benefiting financially from it because, as I said, any conflict is going to attract engagement online. And unfortunately, when it's negative and it's hateful, it will attract engagement, and those companies will be making, you know, advertising revenue, for example, out of ads that are placed next to those stories. So there is the financial undercurrents of what's happening. In general, we've seen in the last 6 months of Trump's presidency, we saw platforms like Reddit and Twitter definitely revise their hateful conduct guidelines. We saw Twitter suspend Donald Trump for glorifying violence. And we've seen in those contexts increases in vigilance in terms of what the thresholds might be. But we've seen there's a report out of the EU from 2022, and TikTok was the only platform that had improved in the timely removal of hate speech from its platform.
I find that quite interesting that TikTok is the one that's actually acting on it, yet it's the one that's under fire too because of its potential, you know, ability to send data to the CCP.
Yes, well, the threats to national security. And I think those claims may well be true, but I think that the real threat to national security that we're all living with in Australia and the United States in particular is violent domestic extremists. So those things need to be balanced in the sense that obviously we need to be worried about espionage at a geopolitical level, but we really need to address some home truths. If this hate's actually domestically grown, then what are we going to do about it? You know, I think that more timely moderation of hate speech, definitely. I think that this incivility is general, though. You know, you go to a hospital, you get on a plane, and you know, there are announcements saying, you know, please respect our staff or what have you. I think it's across
That's
the
true.
Board. So I think we need a reset on those standards.
Am I drawing a long bow by saying that, you know, we've had a bit of a social media experiment, and essentially we're finding out now that it is harming society, you know, in terms of these extremists and also democracy?
Well, that's an interesting question, Warren, because if you think that Facebook was set up in 2004 and we're actually seeing increases, well, it's a combination. Part of it is that the hate isn't being moderated in a timely fashion. That's allowing it to amplify. But we've seen, you know, a big shift from networked protests about queer identity. So after the Colorado Springs shooting, for example, the gays as groomers rhetoric went viral. So I think that what we've seen here, you've asked about money-making and the commercial enterprise that social media platforms are, and that unfortunately part of this, I think, is driven by profit because they know that conflict is going to increase engagement. So I think that we've reached a critical moment where we really need to reflect on the risks and the benefits, and we really need a combination of digital platforms to come to the party, probably some regulation because self-regulation isn't working, and we also need to let our elected representatives know what we want them to do about it. I think that's a big point.
Do you think we will need government intervention here to stop this from happening?
Well, we've already got that, Andrew. So we've already got the EU, for example, Australia, India, and other jurisdictions are already regulating because the digital platforms haven't self-regulated to the extent that we've minimised the harm enough. So I think that we might see more of that. But it's very jurisdictional specific. We're seeing an atomization of these issues across those jurisdictions that I've mentioned and others. So the other problem is that we actually need a concerted approach from all digital platforms, because it might be okay if TikTok is increasing their capacity with the time and removal of hate speech. But if you can get onto YouTube and then send that to sites like BitChute or Parler or Telegram, then we're only addressing part of the problem.
Absolutely. Justin, great to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Drive today.
Great to speak with you.
Thank you. Justin Ellis, Senior Lecturer in Criminology at the University of Newcastle.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.